Happy Sunday and good morning. Good Sunday morning. Welcome to Sunday Civics, the podcast for the civically engaged. I am your host and civics teacher, Eljoy Williams. And on today's episode, we're going to discuss lobbying, what it is, what it isn't, who does it, who can do it. I'll share tips on how you can lobby your elected representatives. And then later we'll be joined by a friend of mine who is a lobbyist. And we'll talk about the role lobbyists play in the democratic process. But first, I don't do the show alone. When I can, I have my civic accomplice with me, June like the month, Moses like the Bible. Good morning, June.
Morning, Eljoy Williams, political strategist.
We have to get Stephanie that song. We have to email that to her. I don't
yes.
think she's going to get a kick
I'm going to get on the bus and I'm going to roll out to Philly and I'm going to get you a song.
We can download it. Like it's available.
I just want to see the creator. I just want to see him and say, I love you.
Okay.
Give me that song.
Also with us is our social justice attorney, Laree Daniel Favors from the Center for
hey,
Law
y'all.
And Social Justice.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm well. Y'all not going to sing the song? I mean, they might not know what the song is. I thought y'all was going to, burst into
it. Oh, yeah. So for those of you, only a few handful of you who've heard me in the various different shows that I've hosted over my career, a friend of mine did a theme song for me. That is called, you can actually buy this on iTunes
mm-hmm.
and you can see it on YouTube and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Eljoy Williams, Political Strategist.
Yep.
It is a song that was written and performed by Elon James White. And the song goes, it's like beatboxing and everything.
Eljoy Williams, Political Strategist.
Political Strategist.
That's right.
I love it. It was a magical time.
Women's History Month, and you made history.
I have made history that there is a song about me that is available for sale, which, by the way, I get no proceeds of.
Oh, lawyer? Lawyer? We
I
need
mean,
you to write
she,
something,
she is
lawyer.
The muse for the song.
I am the muse for the song, but I did not create it.
No. So, yeah. Mm-mm.
So I have no legal standing.
Oh, man.
I mean, you can stand, just not in the law and get any of them residuals.
How about a shaming? Would a good shaming work?
All right. So you know that we like reading reviews on the show. We actually love your reviews and the comments that you send into the show. And we have a review that came on our website because, remember, you can review on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher. You can also just go to the website and post a comment on the show. And post a review as well. So we have a review from the website, and I'm sorry if I'm saying your name incorrectly, but it's Clajon Price, I think.
Hey, Clajon.
Says, I love how light the conversation is when you're talking about such a heavy topic. The nature of this overall podcast is so warm and inviting. Many people do not realize the power that lies within the youth. We are often just worried about the presidential election, not realizing that while it is important, the local elections have the most direct effect on us. So great lesson. And the reason why this person listened to the show is because of April, one of the young people that we had on the show last week. And she introduced this person to the show. And the person says they'll be tuning in every Sunday now.
Yay.
So shout out to you.
All right.
They ended by saying yay for Sunday Civics, and we say yay to you. So remember, when you submit a 5-star review, we'll read it and shout you out on the show. I'm sorry if I butcher your name, but if you have a difficult sounding name that you think people mm-hmm. mispronounce, right? Mm-hmm. Just give me a phonetic.
Yeah.
You know,
there's no shame in that.
Phonetic,
we want to do it right,
so I can shout your name out correctly.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that. You can rate us on Apple Podcasts, mm-hmm. on Stitcher Radio. You can also do it on the website and because after the show, we then post the episode on the show our website.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go to the website. You can find more resources about the topics that we're discussing. So if you wanted to learn more about maybe the article we were talking about or a report or anything, we put it all in the show notes on the website. So go to sundaycivics.org. You can see the episodes there. And then jump on into the comments. June is there in the
always
comments.
Lurking.
June is always in the comments lurking.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can, talk to her and, ask more questions about some of the topics that we discuss. So make sure to review the show there. All right, let's move on to the civic docket.
It's time for the civic docket. That's right. That's right.
We're gonna have a jingle one day.
It's coming. I'm so serious.
So serial. Woo. All right.
Yay.
So we're gonna talk about lobbying in a bit, but I want to talk about some things that are happening all across this country. And Laree, you know, we've talked about education, we've talked about the economy, we've talked about criminal justice, but, you know, all of these issues are things that go on every day in our communities. Yeah. And, you know, thankfully, you know, the president is not in charge of all of these things all the time.
Let us get praise where we can find it.
But I have a couple of, you know, stories I wanted to bring to you guys' attention, because people feel sometimes overwhelmed by what's happening, following what's happening nationally, you know, and not sure that they can make a difference or that you can have any impact. And today's show, we're really going to talk to you about how you do have a say and have an impact, particularly in using your voice and lobbying your representatives. So the first story I want to bring to your attention is about school funding. So those of you who have been listening to the show for some time, and you can go back to the website and listen to our education episode with Dr. Lester Young, which gives the history and context of how our system, our education system, was set up. And so for those of you who don't know, you know, yes, money for education comes from the federal government, but it primarily comes from the local government. And the Education Trust just put out a report, Laree, that says that the highest poverty school districts receive about $1,000 or 7% less per student in state and local funding than the lowest poverty school districts. And that the gap gets even bigger if there are populations that serve students of color. And you see a great disparity there. And so most of the funding coming from state and local come from state and local dollars. And so there's greater concern now because part of the president's budget proposal would slash education funding by $3.6 billion. So exactly. We're already not receiving, and school districts are already not receiving as much as they need. And now there's going to be further cuts.
Right. And training costs to arm teachers, because apparently they want to do that too. So it's the challenge with all of this is that, and this is one of the things I was really glad that came out in the fact sheet that the Education Trust put out, was that even if these schools were funded equitably, because the needs in diverse and heavily in schools that are heavily populated by minorities is so much greater, and there's so many other areas within the life of that whole student that is lacking, that equal funding is not going to produce equitable outcomes. And that's important to remember that, you know, if I have a foot that doesn't work and you have 2 feet that work and we're in a race, just because we start off at the same time doesn't mean we have an equitable shot at reaching the end, because you have 2 legs and I have 1. And so I think that we have to be clear. Not only do our kids come to the schools with different and then sometimes greater needs, but the needs are so great. And I'm talking beyond just funding for lunch programs and breakfast programs. I'm talking like actual academic support services for students who are in housing insecure situations where they may be doubled up, tripled up in a household, maybe living in a shelter. All of these things add to the level of burden. And if we're not taking that into account when we're doling out dollars, we're really missing the mark, and our kids will continue to be underfunded.
And, you know, that's really important, because remember, you know, all of our systems don't happen in vacuums.
That's right.
Right. So, if, you know, you're talking about our schools and education system, and at the same time, we're talking about an increase in homelessness. Well, who do you think makes up the homeless population? It's just not, you know, people, you know, older veterans over a certain age. There's a large portion of young people who are part of the homeless population as well.
That's right.
Well, then how does that impact the education system? How does that impact a child showing up to school prepared to learn? Right. And so you may need additional resources in those overlaid in those areas that are experiencing greater homeless population, L.A., New York, Baltimore, you know, Atlanta. Right. So all of those areas may need additional funding as well. Then we move on to this. I was really flabbergasted by this. And I really shouldn't be, because, you know, I know people who are experiencing this. You know, I myself am one bill away, you know, from being in this position. But there's a report about debt, and particularly how Americans are dealing with debt. There's another story I wanted to bring in this conversation, but we're going to have a whole show on it about, you know, what would happen if we erased student debt and what that would do to the economy and then to just people's individual personal lives. But this report talks about collection agencies, and particularly private collection agencies, June, and that 1 in 3 Americans have some debt. So 1 in 3, that means it's really common.
Oh, extremely.
Yeah. That have been turned over to a private collection agency, and that there's a huge poverty and wealth gap, and it disproportionately affects communities of color. And in particular, the reason why I was so surprised about this is that private collection agencies are doing deals with district attorney's offices and with and prosecutors and other folks to put people in jail.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. These things actually happen. They happen all the time, because there's like an underlying situation where these where our local governments are being funded on the backs of tickets, parking tickets, all of these things. This is where the money is coming from, is from collecting the money from these infractions. And because people can't pay them, you lose your license, but you still got to get to work. So you drive with no license and boom, you get another ticket. Next thing you know, it's blossomed. And the scariest part about this is that, if even from the local level up to the federal level, when you have people like my sister girl, Betsy DeVos, utilizing private debt collectors to start collecting the student debt, you know, like they've been sliding in and reversing these things from the Obama administration, where they were getting that out of the paint. Now that it's all back, it's more than just your parking tickets. Are they going to bring back debtor's prison? You know, they going to bring back the workhouse?
I mean, they kind of already have debtor's prison, because to your point, if you get a parking ticket, you don't pay the ticket, you get a date to appear in court, you don't show up in court, and warrant is issued for your arrest on top of an increase in fees and fines. So you are essentially eligible to be arrested for basically not being able to come. Maybe you couldn't take off of work to get to court. Maybe you had, because you are working 3 jobs, or maybe you didn't even get the notice. It's just something that's super common here, especially in the city of New York, where people are so transient. The population in urban areas is so transient that people aren't even getting properly notified of the lawsuits. And this, you know, y'all gonna have to pull me down off my consumer rights soapbox, because I spent many, many years defending many, many old people, young people, people of color who are being literally abused by debt collection agencies who are violating the law every other day of the week, 6 ways from Sunday, and just doing whatever they can to force people to pay, many times forcing people to pay money in court and out of court that they don't actually owe to that debt collection company. So it's a huge deal. Huge.
And so there was another story on this, particularly on Chicago, and that in 2007, an estimated 1,000 Chapter 13 bankruptcies included debts to the city, and more often they were for unpaid tickets, with the median amount $1,500 per case. That's so people disgusting. Are filing bankruptcy because of parking tickets.
Being that poor is expensive.
Being poor is really expensive. And so they've had an increase in these tickets over time. The latest report, and again, you can go to our website, you know, to see the show notes of this report. And because they said it's not just in Chicago, but it's all around the country where parking, traffic tickets, vehicle compliance tickets are the reason why people are filing Chapter 13. And it's really because cities are aggressive at ticketing because they're trying to boost revenue.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. So this is in Chicago. Tickets brought in nearly $264 million in 2016, which is about 7% of the city's $3.6 billion operating budget.
Good That's Lord. A lot of gentrification funding.
Now, I have a question, though. And it's not even trying to be funny. Like, when you bring in, like, we were talking in a past show about the opportunity situations that Tim Scott brought in and everything. So when you bring in businesses and they don't have to pay any taxes, isn't this how we get there, where every single municipality is trying to live off of tickets? Is that kind of how we got there, when businesses not paying taxes?
Mm.
It's just a question, because, you know, I'm not the bright one in all of this. So I need y'all two to do your super twin powers to activate.
I'm going to need you to
stop. Because you are, I mean, because you saw, I mean, cities have to find other ways to bring in income. And the easiest way that cities can bring in is parking revenue, is tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some of the easiest. You'll see that there's often in certain cities when they talk about high licensing fees.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about occupational licensing last episode, but even in operating a physical business, you can get, you know, in New York City, there are a number of reports about small businesses having random fees and, you know, tax and inspection fees and, you know, all of those kinds of things. And all of that is direct income for a municipality or, you know, for a local area when they're not just, you know, going off of their tax base. And so, yes, if you're giving, people think that tax abatements, or you don't have to pay taxes if you build a building, you don't have to pay taxes for 25 years. That has a direct impact on a city's ability to be able to collect revenue, and then they have to make it up. So somebody is paying for it
somehow.
Free ain't free.
And it's usually the people least able to afford it.
Exactly.
Because being poor is expensive.
It really is. I mean, you know, and I don't know how often you've heard that phrase, being poor is expensive, but it really is. You pay more money to get access to money.
Yes.
To even your money.
Yes. Yes.
Like, just like check cash. You think about check cash in places. You think about laundries. You think about, like, every service that you need, there is an extra tax, an extra poor tax added onto it for the convenience of you, because we know you need the money right away. Mm-hmm. We know you can, you know, you going into a bank account, maybe a check cash in 3 days or, you know, or 2 days. You don't have the luxury to do that. So pay, you know, 24% on the dollar. You know, so you can have access to your money quicker.
I have one more just odd question, because I know that a lot of these municipalities moved into doing the parking meters with a private public like partnership. So would that also constitute a reason why people are paying so much money in these tickets and everything?
Well, that, and they raised the fees. So one of the reports was looking at what was happening in Chicago. It wasn't even so much that they had increased the prices, or I'm sorry, that they had increased the number of tickets. They had raised the fees for each ticket. So the same ticket that might have cost you $100 2 months ago now might cost you $350 for parking in front of the same fire hydrant.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good Lord. That's it. That's the only answer.
It's expensive being poor.
Heavy side.
And even people that think of themselves not in poverty, not, you know, at the poverty line or not there, there many more of us are one ticket away, one fine away. One, you know, my husband got a bill from our one of our doctors recently, a couple of days ago or so. And he texted and called me. He hit the roof.
What, they charge him $500 for
it? It was like $300 or something like that. And he's just like, people ain't got this kind of money. What's going on? He's going off. And I'm like, I think we have to submit it to the insurance company. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, he's going off. But those are the kind of stresses and the kind of thing. And if you think, you know, bless us that, you know, in a paycheck or two, we can pay it off. But, you know, for some people, that $350 bill is like, well, I don't know what we're going to do. They're going to get a dollar for 350 days.
Hold on, let me call you and let me try and make some type of a payment plan that's going on. But then, remember, if you miss that payment plan, you in deeper than you were before you started a payment plan.
As in student debt.
Listen, and me and Karen were talking a few weeks ago on the Karen Hunter Show about the fact that most America, I think it's like 69% of Americans, could not get access to $1,000 if they needed it in an emergency.
Oh, I'd be dead.
Which is telling. They're just telling. If you got 2/3 of Americans who cannot get access to $1,000 in time of an emergency, that's saying a lot about the economic instability that is really shaking the country, particularly our community.
Well, when we come back, we're going to, you know, all of this is local issues, right? So these are municipal issues. So meaning your mayor, your city council made these decisions on raising the ticket prices, or an agency within the municipality and in your state made the decision. Regarding creating partnerships with district attorney's office, remember district attorney's office, you know, more than likely the district attorney is elected. Right. So why are they creating these partnerships with private debt collection agencies? And if they do have them, they need to open the books and see what these partnerships include and make them, you know, public. That's something you need to go ask. Also about school funding. Right. School funding more often comes from the state. So when's the last time you talked to your state legislature or you've seen from your state legislature on how they are investing money in the schools in your district and in your community? So we are going to talk coming up next. We're going to talk about lobbying. We'll start with an interview with a friend of mine, Jackie Williams, who is a lobbyist here in New York, who's going to talk about the role a lobbyist plays in our democratic process. And then after that, I'm going to give you some tips about doing your own advocacy day, doing your own lobby day, because you can be a lobbyist for your community. You don't have to be, you know, registered and, you know, all that kind of stuff. As an individual representing yourself, your block, your community, or an issue, we're going to talk about ways that you can do that on your own when we come back. Welcome, welcome, welcome back to Sunday Civics here on Sirius XM Urban View Channel 126. I am your host and civics teacher, L. Joy Williams. And I'm really excited about this next conversation. Joining me to continue this conversation about lobbying, we just talked about how you individually can lobby your legislators and affect policy. But now I want to have a conversation with an actual lobbyist. And so joining me to have that conversation is Jackie Williams, no direct relation, but, you know, we'll get into that later. She's the owner of 99 Solutions, a government relations and lobbying firm based here in New York City, specifically Brooklyn. And, you know, she's my sis. She's my girl. Hey, Jackie.
Hey, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Thank you so much for you know, coming on the show.
Well, thank you for letting me be a part of the classroom setting.
Yeah. Because, you know, we talked about earlier about how individuals can empower themselves to lobby or affect policy and legislation. But now I want to talk a bit about what lobbyists do. And so to better understand this, I went to the first person I think of when I think about lobbying, and that's you, Jackie. Jackie is like a big sis to me. She has helped me in a number of ways in my career, from advice to, you know, employment to everything. And and then she has a particular take on lobbying. And so, Jackie, explain to folks what a lobbyist actually does.
Well, a lobbyist, and it's a dirty little word to a lot of folks because a lot of people are not aware what it is. A lobbyist is someone that is hired by a particular entity. It can be a union. It could be a corporation. It could be a small business. It could be a bunch of youth that have an issue and they want to hire someone to give them strategy on how to communicate with legislators to get the legislator to do what they need them to do in order to change laws, make a law, and amend a law, create new policies and ideas that could be to the benefit of some, to the detriment of others, depends on the subject matter.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that lobbyists, the word lobbyist is a dirty word. So why do lobbyists are perceived as sort of the boogeyman or the problem?
Well, it took me a long time to understand why it was so mysterious. Because most people don't discuss it, that there is someone, you know, being a puppet master somewhere, for lack of a better term. We as lobbyists are going to literally stand, if I need to, by the bathroom and wait for a legislator to come out, hopefully after they've washed their hands, and lobby them about what I'm hired to discuss with them and get their attention. And a lot of people feel that lobbyists in America are the reasons why the system is the way it is, and not to the benefit of a lot of people.
Well, there are different types, right? So
yes.
If we're talking on the federal level, there are lobbyists who, on the federal level, who are lobbying Congress, who, yes, they come with a lot of money. They may be lobbyists for powerful corporations. You think about, you know, tobacco or gun lobby, right? You're thinking mm-hmm. about the NRA and, you know, other. So anything that people associate with having this great influence and power, it could be big business or things like that, then they associate that individual lobbyist as being the devil or being, you know, part of the problem.
Right.
But there are lobbyists on the other side
that work for good.
Right. Like yourself.
Right. That work for good. Well, some people, depending on what side of the issue that I'm on, may not feel that that's what I'm doing. It comes with its ups and its downs, depending on who is being impacted by what I'm hired to do. Like, for example, a lot of the laws that say that affect the criminal justice system, you may have a group of lawyers out there that are not in sync with some of the views of the grassroots movement of changing the laws in the criminal justice system, and they might be against it because it affects how they eat and make money.
Mm-hmm.
If some of these laws change that some communities of color have issues with, a lot of criminal attorneys won't make money.
So you're talking about things like the push in changing like bail reform.
Right.
Or, I can think about also decriminalizing marijuana.
Let's go to the bail reform.
Okay.
Do you know there's an association for bail bondsmen?
Yeah.
And I'm quite sure they wouldn't want the bail reform situation to take place.
So in that instance, they would then hire a lobbyist to try to beat back.
Right, to either stop the advocacy that's going on to change the law for bail reform.
Okay, so let's continue with this bail reform as an example, right?
Right.
So the Bail Bondsmen's Association decide, okay, we're going to come together, we're going to hire a lobbyist to push back on this because this essentially puts us out of business or at least reduces how much money we make. Right?
Exactly.
And so they come to a lobbyist like yourself or others and, you know, employ you and say, help us beat this back.
Right. And in doing that, that's when a lobbyist says, okay, let me go look at the city council list here in New York. It's called the city council.
Mm-hmm.
In other places in the country, the local government system is set up a little differently. But that's when they say, let's go look at the city council list and see who's the chair of the criminal justice committee that might hear the subject matter on this issue. And then they would give them the strategy to meet with everyone on that committee to push the agenda for criminal justice reform, or the Bail Bondsman Association would speak to all of those people on that committee to say, stop the reform.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then here's where the nuance comes in. Unfortunately, our government system and a lot of our legislators play to individuals who may be contributing to their campaigns.
Right. So one of the things that lobbyists may do is, in addition to doing those meetings, right? So they say, you go meet with the chair, you know, make your case. This is the strategy you have. Lobbyists may also say, donate money or go to the fundraiser of that chair.
Well, in today's climate, I would hope that a lobbyist wouldn't recommend that. I would hope that the lobbyist that's hired already has those pre-existing relationships
mm-hmm.
where that donation at current is not necessary.
Right, right.
Because it would technically be inappropriate to donate money at the same time that you are advocating or lobbying for or against the issue.
But we see stories all the time that happens. But to your point, that the part of a lobbyist's job is to have these pre-existing relationships with folks, right? So, and that's part of the what lobbyists do. They, you know, people come to you and say, "Well, I know this lobbyist deals a lot with big business or on tax issues or things." So there may be lobbyists that specialize in a particular issue.
That is correct. And one of the things about hiring a lobbyist or being an advocate, or if you're interested in this particular industry, you must know subject matter.
Mm. So it's
just not just about knowing someone. You know, I know the guy that works at my corner store, but he's not going to give me a discount.
I see.
You know, and so it's, you know, it's bad information for people to think, in order to be effective as a lobbyist, whether you're for or against the subject matter, is that just because you know someone. And I think that's the mistake people make.
Mm. So it's important to also know the subject matter.
That is correct.
And then to also be honest with your client as well, because you could say to your client, like, listen, the public will on this is not going to move it a certain way. This is your best option in this.
Correct. Or if you are a good lobbyist, you will tell your client that, hey, this elected official might be the chair of this committee, but their history is to speak against what you want. And the best we may be able to do is educate him or she, him or her, on the subject matter.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not a guarantee.
Nothing is a guarantee. It is illegal to guarantee anything as a lobbyist. You cannot do that.
Well, you know, people watch TV, right? They watch things like Scandal or House of Cards. And, you know, they have this, you know, I think it perpetuates this boogeyman persona of what lobbyists do.
Well, yes and no. I find that because I am a woman of color, and there are very few people of color who are lobbyists, I find that my Caucasian counterpart can do things that I necessarily would not be able to do.
Explain that.
So I find, first of all, in the state of New York, there are about 12,000 registered lobbyists, because by law you have to register. It has to be a public record that you have a contract with someone and you are listed in a government system. And here in New York, it's called J. Cope. We as the lobbyists, we say J. Cope, J. Joke, but it's called J. Cope. And they're a system to say we have to do public disclosure on who we're representing, who we're lobbying, because they're trying to keep everybody honest.
Right.
And so that you have to have full disclosure. With that being said, there's about 12,000 registered lobbyists in the state of New York. Of the 12,000, it's about only 17 of color.
Wow.
In New York. Of the 17 of color, there are only, I think, 7 of us that own. And that's a sad state of affairs, because if you look at the impact of that, if there are only 17 of color in the industry,
and only 7 own.
7 own, and they are more than 10,000 lobbyists representing big business, little business, unions, non-unions, criminal justice issues, social justice issues, then whose perspective can the client that's hiring other lobbyists really get the perspective of what's going on within the current day legislative bodies? Because most of the legislative bodies, especially in urban markets, where most of the challenges are faced, are legislators of color.
Right.
So my white counterpart or Caucasian counterpart, when we are lobbying, he or she may be able to have a different relationship and do things differently because our black and brown legislators treat them different. You know, I hate to say this. Sometimes I wonder whether they come from the school of thought they believe white ice is colder. And we as lobbyists of color, We have to cross our T's and dot our I's on a whole nother level.
Right, right. So what is the, what would you say is the extra burden a lobbyist of color has in doing this work?
On a, in representing a client, we also have to be clear that just because a legislator is of color doesn't mean he's gonna, he or she is going to do what we want them to do.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in providing them with advice and counsel, they need to know the public component of that discussion. If you have to reach out to communities, that just because a community is of color doesn't mean that we can get them to agree with us either. We might be able to communicate on a different level, but just because they look like us physically, you know, on the exterior front, doesn't necessarily they're going to just believe and do what we say.
Oh, so you can't just go wrangle your Negroes because that's what...
I've tried to tell a few clients, you know, hiring me as your lobbyist does not get blackface. They like, Jackie, what does blackface mean? I just can't stand there because it's coming out my mouth and I'm of color and I look like them and tell them X and I prove it and lobby them the same way I would get approvals, same way that I would to non-people of color.
Right.
It doesn't work like that.
Yeah. And some people think, I mean, that's across the board though, because people often think that you can just, you know, use a consultant, a lobbyist, or even just a regular employee, go speak to, you know, these people and then all of a sudden they understand. Not realizing, again, we say this on the show, you know, folks aren't monolithic, right?
That's correct.
You know, and there's different class issues, there's different community issues that you have to take into account.
Exactly. And it's unfortunate that that is applicable to our culture, that they actually think that we can wave a magic wand and cultures that are not like ours, they don't apply that theory to themselves.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. So I do a lot of pushback and teaching my clients that's not what we're going to do today or tomorrow.
So now what, you know, for communities and organizations, small groups that can't afford, because, you know, sometimes lobbyists are expensive.
Yeah, they can be.
Right. So it, for those who can't afford, let's say, a community that's beating back, you know, big business and they want to be, you know, advocate on the same level, what are some some lobbying principles that you would give an individual, a small group of young people or a community that they could use because they may not have enough money to sort of hire a lobbyist to be in the room?
Well, the first thing is while you're trying to push the agenda of what you want to an elected official, don't assume that you need to write a check for them to hear you. You can use other tactics, all right? Also, when you go, make sure you document. You must have paper trail to provide substance to what you're saying. Legislators hear 1,001 things all day long. And I know you like to believe that you're the only one speaking to them and the only one asking them for something, but that's the wrong attitude to have. When you, same way someone would approach you and asking you for something and you want them to respect you, your time, that's the same thing needs to be done for your legislator. Although your legislator works for you, you need to take in consideration there are more subject matters that they're working on. Also, you can need to document what's the advantages or disadvantage of supporting or being against whatever your issue is. Be able to articulate it. Be clear. Be specific about what you want from the legislator. Like, for example, if there's a piece of legislation that you support and the legislator doesn't, that's when you say, I need you to support legislation X, Y, and Z, and this is why. And this is what you will impact if you don't. This is how it hurts the area that you say you care about and represent. And you have to be clear, be specific, because most elected officials don't know every subject matter. Most of them know one or two subject matters. The rest of it, they do fluff. Because they can't, no one person knows everything. So you have to teach and You have to educate them on your issue and be able to advocate towards them at the same time. And so you can't get frustrated and you can't stop. The one thing about lobbyists that we constantly have to do is follow up, follow up, follow up, follow up. If you don't follow up, you're going to get the results of not following up, which is nothing. Mm. You know, it's like if you tying a shoe and you don't lace it all the way up, the bow is going to come loose. So you must make sure it's all the way laced up and that the bow is tied appropriately. And you must follow up. You have to follow up and be relentless because they're busy. Sometimes you're going to call their office. The voicemail is going to come on. Leave a full-fledged message. Email them and constantly email them. If you have to go stand in front of the office because they got to go in and out of it, you wait for them.
Because that's what lobbyists do.
That's what lobbyists do. That's where you stand in the lobby. So you wait for them. Another way to be relentless is to get the elected official schedule for the day or media schedule for the day and find out where they're going to be. Stand out there instead of throwing rocks and protesting. Educate, educate, follow up, follow up. Say your name 1,000 times. Call and call until they respond.
Jackie, thank you so very much for coming to join and educating our audience about this process. We definitely have an engaged audience who take all of the tips that we give them and try to apply them. So I'm looking forward to seeing how our audience uses these tips as they go and engage with their elected officials. And we'll certainly have you back again to talk about more issues.
I appreciate the opportunity. And my last word to you is look at the career opportunities and being a lobbyist. Don't be afraid.
All right. Thank you so much. We'll be right back with more of Sunday Civics here on Sirius XM Urban View, Channel 126. Welcome back. Welcome back to Sunday Civics, the show for the civically engaged. Oh, June and Lavrie. That was great, right? Jackie.
She's amazing.
Yeah, Jackie has been instrumental throughout my career here in New York as a consultant, just as a general big sister. We are not related, even though we have the same last name. But she's my girl. You know,
yeah.
if I'm in a foxhole.
She come and get you?
She coming.
All right now.
You know.
Mm. Everybody needs some folks like that on their
team. Yes. Mm. I feel like I have a crew. I have a Dora.
Your Dora Milaje
crew.
Yes.
Dora yes.
I see. I got my Black Panther reference in there before you did, Lorie.
You did, and you know what? You can tell I'm in serious mama mode because as soon as you said Dora, I went the Explorer in my head. So
oh my goodness!
You beat me to Wakanda, sis. That's all right. We all gonna make it.
Beat me to Wakanda. Oh my goodness.
Although
all
I
right.
am going to see it again tomorrow, but okay.
Okay. Oh Lord. You know what? I sent June this week.
It was good. Dope. I went to the Apollo.
Apollo because she can't be out in the streets not having seen it.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. Now I'm threatening other people because they haven't. See how that is? I'm part of the administration too.
You're part of the administration. We actually, so this, one of the other things we did this week is I moderated a conversation with young people at the Schomburg for the Knicks and Madison Square Garden. And I got to meet Allen Houston, which, you know, for those of you who are Knicks fans, like I did my best not to fangirl, right, June?
Mm-hmm. You were very professional.
You know, I only mentioned the 99 finals once.
Mm-hmm. One time. And was very respectful.
You know? I think I, deserve some claps for that.
I'm going to give you snaps because that's what the kids were doing.
They don't do claps, Lorie. I don't know if you know. But the kids,
informed of that this week.
The high school kids now do snaps.
Because it's a 90s Nuri Rican cafe.
Yeah. because
right, they all missed out on the spoken word era. So they was like, we need it back.
All right, so Jackie at the end gave some of her tips on if you are trying to get an issue, you're fighting back big business. Maybe after listening to this episode and listening to the beginning conversation, you want to go to your city council, go to the district attorney, or go to the state and advocate on school funding, or try to, you know, put some sunshine on these deals that DAs have done with private debt collectors. Mm-hmm. And so that you may be doing some lobbying. Actually, in a couple of weeks, I'm taking my Brooklyn NAACP folks. We're going up to Albany, which is our capital, we'll be lobbying our legislators on a social justice agenda under NAACP. And then we're also doing it on the city level. We just sent a letter off to the mayor today. Because in April, we're going to go to City Hall and we want to meet with agencies. We're going to meet with the comptroller and everybody advance on those issues as well. So I have a few tips for you on lobbying. And actually, if you go to the website, if you're listening now, you'll, you know, hear them. But if you go to the website, I'll have a nice little download for you on my top tips for organizing your own lobby day. Maybe you and your block association, maybe your fraternity, sorority, or just a neighborhood group, or you just, you know, your church or somebody, and we're going to go advocate and talk about issues that matter to us. So here's tip number one. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Be a constituent.
What you mean by that?
You know, because people call, you know, I remember being a staffer. And, you know, people, and particularly we're in this age of social media, when you see news stories, Larie, sometimes it'll be like, in Utah, they're getting ready to pass a bill in the state legislature on this issue. And then you have all of these people from, like, California calling Utah. They don't care.
Mm-hmm. No.
They do not care. You are not a constituent here. Mm. I don't represent you. You have, you know, you can't vote, you know, for me. There's no documentation, whatever. So you want to make sure that the people that you are speaking with are the people who represent you. And that's including from the top down. So yes, your governor, you are a constituent. If you're talking to the governor or to the mayor, you know, or to the police department or the district attorney. But if you're calling the state legislature or your council, make sure that they're your representatives, because that's also where you have power, right? If they hear and they see that, okay, I have all of these constituents from my district who have called my office regarding this issue, you know, if they're a good legislator and their staff is good, they're going to be, you know, they're perking up, they're looking,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so that's my number one tip is to, you know, don't, if you live in California, be calling Utah state legislature.
Why? They're not going
to. But you can call your cousins and your friends in Utah and tell them to call their state legislature. Don't call state legislature.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Just be a constituent.
Okay.
So the second tip is do the research. You heard Jackie talk about that,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You know the information about the issue that you're advocating for. Is the legislator signed on to the bill? Are they a co-sponsor? Did they ask questions during a hearing? Those kinds of information. Know what the bill or what the issue says and doesn't say. There have been plenty of times where I, you know, as a staffer, people have come to me and I engage with them, Larie, and ask them the question, well, in the bill, doesn't it say that it covers, you know, X, Y, and Z? And they say, Oh,
does it?
We'll have to get back to you on that, you know? So know the issue, and then also know where your legislator is on the issue, right? All of it is public record, particularly if they've given, if they've had hearings. Most of the legislatures and the councils, you can watch, you know, you can go back and look at hearings and stuff on their website, because everybody's trying to have a website and a Snapchat and a Instagram, and they do press releases. So you can go and look and see, has your legislator issued a press release on the issue and what they say and what they believe on it. And it could be they're on your side. They just have a particular problem with one aspect of the bill. You know, so, you know, do the research and know the information, because to Jackie's point, legislators don't know everything. And so sometimes, and this goes to one of my next points, is sometimes you're going to serve as the resource.
If you have it together, of course.
Right. Because for some legislators, I don't know much about this issue. You're coming to lobby on it. So tell me what. And then they see that there is some groundswell from their constituency. They will go based upon that. And I tell particularly those of you who are with organizations, nonprofit organizations, you can end up being a resource to that legislator on that issue. Right. So if you're knowledgeable, you do the research, you can do that. Be on time, but know that the representative may not.
Oh, that makes sense.
You want to be on time, but know that particularly if you're going during a legislative session, sometimes they may be coming out of a hearing, going into a hearing, and, you know, they may be running late, which brings me to my next point, that it's okay to meet with staff.
Yes, right. Yes, they can be more effective sometimes than the
sometimes,
big man on top.
Shoot. you know, more often than not, you know, if you're meeting with the chief of staff or you're working on an issue and meeting with the legislative director, that's what you needed.
Yeah.
Because they're the one drafting the legislation for the person. They're the one that's going
to
be in the meetings with the legislator, you know, passing, you know, notes to the person and letting them know on the issue. And quite often, sometimes the legislative director is the expert on these issues, right? Whereas the legislator is, you know, is then relying on them, right? So they can they know the bill in and out. They know the issue in and out, particularly if the legislator has co-sponsored the bill or signed on to the bill, so they can have the conversation with you. And so I know people like meeting directly with the member, and that's fine and that's great. You want to get that FaceTime when you can, but if you can meet with the staff, the chief of staff or the legislative director or whoever is handling whatever issue you want addressed, that's equally as important. Right. Mm-hmm. The other thing that Jackie said, these last two, was make a direct ask. So just don't. I mean, if you yes, I'm going there to educate, but this is transactional, people.
So I can't go in there and be like, well, you know, do you think that maybe on Tuesday you could possibly think about maybe going over there and then?
No. No.
I have to be real direct. Like, we need a traffic light on the corner 135th and Lenox
by the summer.
Oh, we got to give a deadline. Oh, look,
and by the start of summer, because our kids are going to be playing in the street during the summertime, so we can't have it at the end of summer before school the end of June.
Right. Or can we count on your vote for this budget item to increase, you know, the education budget for District 9, you know, services?
Right.
Can we count on your vote? You know, so giving them a, you know, direct ask and ask them from there. And then the last one, like Jackie said, follow up. So after you did the meeting, send a thank you. Thank you for meeting with us, even if it was the staff. Thank you for allowing your staff to meet with us, and send a note to the staff member. Thank you for following up to see, have you made a decision whether or not you'll be supporting bill number blah, blah, blah in the affirmative, you know, and if they had questions, if they may have asked you, well, would you accept this compromise or things like that? Follow up. When's the next hearing? Was it presented? Anything like that. So you need to follow up. You need to basically stalk them.
Aren't there laws?
What
friendly
about
stalking?
Friendly, yeah, like
friendly stalking.
Yeah, very like stalking. Basically, Jackie said it. She was like, "That you say your name all the time. You gonna be if they gonna hold the Black History Month event, you gonna be at the Black History Month event." And it was like, "Oh, I was just I thought maybe you would be announcing here at the Black History event whether or not you were supportive of increasing."
And don't do that with the rah-rah. Don't go rolling up to the event and throwing stones.
Oh, I know you had, you know, a constituent day, you know, in front of your office. So I thought I would show up because maybe you would, you know, tell constituents while you were here that you were supporting, you know, our bill to increase funding for, you know, asthma research here in the district.
Wonderful. But do it the way
Eljoy
said.
And then you can be like, oh, and who are all these other people? Yes, this is a busload of folks that also care about this bill that I brought with me because we are all here to lobby you.
And you can stand like cross-armed and mean mug, but don't bring the rah-rah.
Or you could cross-arm and say Wakanda forever.
Oh, my goodness.
You know.
Right over left.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Remember, you can get all of this information on our website at sundaycivics.org, and look at the show notes. We spend time writing those, so you can find all of the detailed information about our guest, about the stories we discuss, and also tips and resources that you should use. So please go to the website. Mm-hmm. That's also where you can talk to June.
Yep.
You can post up in the comments. Yep. At June be lurking.
In the morning.
Early in the morning. and get more information and resources for the show. We're going to be back here next Sunday because apparently we're here every Sunday at 10 a.m.
Same bat time, same bat channel. That's right.
And we'll be back with more lessons and news that you should be fully and actively civically engaged in. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next Sunday.